Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, dear listener. It's Joe here from the Guitar Nerds podcast, just dropping in at the start of this, the pilot episode of Guitar Nerds Live, to let you know that if you want to become involved in future episodes of Recording Guitar Nerds Live, that is to be included with the hosts, asking questions, talking about gear on an episode, all you have to do is sign up to the Guitar Nerds Patreon account at any tier. That's from the dollar tier, the $5 tier, or the $10 tier. If you just sign up over on patreon.com/guitarnerds, you'll be included every week, or roughly every week, when we do an episode of Guitar Nerds Live, and you'll be able to shoot the stuff with Mark Peckham and one of the other hosts each week. Enjoy this first pilot episode. It's a mess. Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Guitar Nerds Live, the experimental phone-in guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Peckham. Joining me is the man, the myth, there's plenty of names for him, none of which I can say on this podcast. It's going out. Joe Branton.
Hello.
Hello. I didn't expect you to finish then. I was drinking. I'm sorry. Hello. Yes, it's excellent to be here. Mark, with you hosting the podcast once again.
So for those listening on the regular podcast feed, this is going out this is live to our Patreon supporters, and we're doing it through Discord. So people are able to talk to us via chat. So if you hear us making references to chat, it's because people are listening live. And we will also be getting some calls as well. If people have got calls, if you're in the chat right now, jump in. We'll turn on your microphone. You can contribute to the podcast. And we want to hear from you, basically. So so do get involved. So Joe, the way I thought we'd run this for Guitar Nerds Live is we'll have a topic, like we used to do on the Patreon episode. If people have got thoughts, they can contribute. Does that sound good?
That sounds fantastic. Yes, you didn't give me any real information on what this podcast was going to consist of. So,
oh, Joe Branton's just died. Okay, that's not a great start. Let's wind that back. Joe, are you alive?
I am. I'm right here. Can you hear me?
You just cut out for a second.
No, that's strange. What did you hear me say?
We'll leave all that. You said that I didn't give you any information on the topic.
Yeah, that was about all I said.
Good. Well, we'll leave all this in because this is experimental. This is week one, and like I said, I'm not 100% convinced that Discord is the best place to do this. But let's work with it for now. So the topic for this week is, with the decade drawing to a close, which brand has won the decade? I thought we could talk about it. And then if people have got comments, they can put them in the chat. Or if they want to come on the podcast and talk, we can let them on and we'll turn the mics live and have some fresh voices on the podcast.
So is this going to be like, because we were going to do in January, we're going to do gear of the decade instead of gear of the year. So we can work out what the best individual things were of the last 10 years. But I guess, is this a pint-sized version of that?
Yeah, so we haven't announced that yet, but I think there's going to be a Patreon series.
I just did.
Yeah, well, you just sort of let it slip. But Patreon series called Gear of the Decade, where we go through year by year and do a kind of mini Gear of the Year. And then at the end, we kind of wrap it up with what was the best gear of the decade. So we'll be doing that. But this is not really
it's not really a mini version of that as such, but I just wanted to talk about, you know, what brands have kind of killed it this year. What do you think? Who instantly jumps to mind for you?
I mean, the problem is that we're going to get in trouble because we're doing what was the gear of the decade, kind of in the year that Fender have done a complete rebrand and a really sort of long needed upgrade to everything in the last 2 years, which has just seen them. And it's not just the stuff they've put out, it's the way that they're marketing themselves, the introduction of pedals, their real sort of a really like keen attention to detail on how they want their brand to be perceived, with all the focusing on surf colors and introducing that to everything from sort of plectrums to string ball ends to cables. You know, I kind of think they've done such a great job of becoming a really consistent brand. And then of course at the other end, I think the Boss Katana is probably the most important amplifier of the last 10 years. It's certainly the only amp I think in 10 years that's been released that has doesn't seem to have anyone saying a bad word about it. Like it's not even a matter of taste. You know, I could talk about the Blues Junior, but some people don't like the Blues Junior. Or we could talk about the Tiny Terror and how that revolutionized small amplifiers. But the Katana, the problem with the Tiny Terror is it did revolutionize small amplifiers, but it also didn't sound that great. But the Katana sounds fantastic, is affordable. You know, everyone seems to be really into it. It's a fantastic thing. So then we have like Boss doing that and Fender with this total rebrand. And of course, now we're in an issue of people calling us biased because of that. But then on the other hand, we have the introduction of Helix, which completely changed multi effects. It made the sort of Axe FX thing affordable and it was really good. And then
there's a lot to weigh up, isn't there? Because, you know, like Boss, yes, you know, recently, obviously the Katana, fantastic amp. And, you know, they've released a lot of good compacts. But think back to right to the start of the decade, you know, thinking what Boss doing in 2010. And I'm sure if Matt Knight was on this call, he'd probably let us know exactly. But, you know, I can't really think of any great stuff from Boss that came out at the beginning of the decade. Certainly they kind of stumbled a little bit with kind of multi effects on things like ME25 and stuff like
True.
That.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to put a shout out there for PRS. And the reason being...
No, you're just trying to be devil's avocado now.
I'm throwing it into the mix. And, you know, ultimately, we're going to throw the phones open to see if people want to come and kind of bring their own...
You're planning this just to be awkward with me because I feel about PRS and
I'm not.
Life,
so,
and you know
so,
I can't swear.
So yeah, well yeah, you can't, you definitely can't swear. So the reason I'm making the argument for it because, you know, they've put out a lot of guitars that have gone beyond what their normal scope of, you know, what people call the dentist guitar. You know, they released the S2 series, which has bridged the gap between SE and the full size, you know, the full fat PRS, as it were. And they've made some really good kind of, you know, affordable American guitars. And also, you know, the SE range has gone from strength to strength. You know,
the
some of the stuff they're doing.
Yeah, the SE range is fantastic. I mean, you think it was only, I guess, 4 years ago they started doing like the SE Exotic series where you could get all these ridiculous sort of wood tops for like, those guitars were £799 in pounds,
yeah.
Which was very, very good. And they introduced baritones and semi-hollows into that range. They're definitely really well-built guitars from their entry-level stuff right up to their expensive stuff. Another cool thing that PRS have done is kind of really throw their hat into the amplifier ring over the last few years with that ridiculously expensive John Mayer signature, but also the people help me. What was the other one? The 20 Watter that they did. It was really, really good. There's a
the
version
Archon, apparently.
The Archon, yeah, that's the one. That was absolutely fantastic. I was a massive fan of the Archon amplifier.
That's going to be a benefit to it's going to be a benefit to doing this podcast rather than the regular one, is people can correct us live rather than doing it, you know, 4 or 5 days later when they listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say PRS are in with the shout. Another one that I thought of for kind of gear of the decade in terms of, you know, impact would be Strymon. You know, think all of that stuff, I think, came out since 2010. And, you know, I think what having things like the timeline and the blue sky and the big sky has done to the effects pedal market, you know, it's pushed the average price that people are paying for effects pedals, you know, through the roof compared to what it was at the start of the decade.
Absolutely. I tell you what, they've done a wonder for kind of brands in the sort of middle area of pricing, just because all of a sudden you could charge more for a middling pedal because the top end of pedals is now so much more money. Although I do think they did do that, and then loads of other brands sort of followed suit. I don't think Strymon have the domination of the effects market that maybe they did when they started out, and I kind of feel like we might see them. We could potentially see them start to fizzle out a little bit in comparison to the competition. Like, we, you know, obviously not trying to blow Matt's trumpet too much, but the 500 series by Boss was, you know, technically on paper, if you care about the quality of the sounds which they measure in some form or another, then the Boss stuff is technically on paper a higher quality pedal. And then if you think other people like Source Audio have been coming up releasing sort of cracking pedal after cracking pedal, and Meris as well, it's kind of changed things. I think Strymon started something. I don't think they've necessarily finished it.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's that's why they're kind of in with a shout, because they have kind of changed the game. And I don't think you'd see things like the 500 series and the what's the new one called, the 200 series without, you know, things like the Strymon pedals being out there. So I think, you know, that they're in for a shout, and it'd be interesting to hear kind of what people, you know, if people do want to call in and give their opinion, I'd like to hear what people think about that.
Well, I'm kind of agreeing with Check Chap here about sort of the effects prize going with like Wampler, JHS, Earthquaker or Keeley. I think those brands have kind of they've really come into their own in the last 10 years to, you know, be in a position. Obviously all of those brands except for Earthquaker were involved in the that big Sweetwater massive pedal board thing. But it's not just that. I kind of feel like 10 years ago, you can go and watch a Mars Volta rig rundown with Juan Alderete on YouTube. And he talks about it from just over 10 years ago. And he talks about this pedal that he got from this company called Earthquaker. It's a brand new thing. Like, it's actually a custom unit where he's sort of built a couple of the effects into one for him. And they were nothing then. And now they're the standard for sort of weird boutique pedals. They're kind of becoming the next Electro-Harmonix in that sense.
Yeah, there's also a good shout. Rob Grant in the chat is saying TC have done a lot. I know it's not so much high-end stuff, but still epic value. And actually, that's a good shout. Think where TC were in 2010. They were doing things like the G system, I guess. And, you know, yeah, you think like Hall of Fame and even the Looper stuff, Loopers.
I mean, I'm thinking more about their budget liner stuff when they did their merger with Behringer. And I know a lot of those pedals were rehoused, but nonetheless, they were rehoused in really decent housings. And all of a sudden you can get that sort of third dimension, which was the, you know, the Boss Dimension C copy for 30 quid. They did a great vibrato, the tail spin as well. There were some, I think the delays were okay, but the modulations were the ones where I thought were really pretty good. And, you know, they looked cool as well. And they were 20-30 quid.
How about
and the Polytune? Ed Bentley just mentioned, yeah, and the Polytune. I think the Polytune is, I guess you're probably speaking about the tuner, but the pitch clip thing, I think that's revolutionized sort of headstock tuners. That's, you know, what, who would have thought people would be considering spending £60 on a clip-on tuner? But they are. Those things sell like hotcakes, or at least they did back.
Totally. How about a guitar brand? What about someone like Reverend or someone like that who is doing, you know, something completely different? And, you know, weren't really, I mean, they were around, I remember, but they've really kind of upped their game this decade. Here's one from the chat. Ed Bentley's just brought up Strandberg. How do you feel about that as being brand of the decade?
I don't honestly think that, I mean, he said that as a joke, but, you know, I don't honestly think that that Strandberg have done enough. I mean, I guess revolutionized it's a new approach, you know, making the sort of asymmetrical rectangular necks, and certainly maybe you're right, maybe headless thing. I think maybe more people have got into the headless thing, and maybe they've caused something of a revolution in that sense. So I guess actually the more I think about it, yeah, there's definitely been a real movement for modern guitars and this real return to headless instruments. And Strandberg are definitely cool. I think the price point for Strandbergs is obstructive, and I think there are a lot of other brands that have done really great similar stuff. The rectangular asymmetrical neck is it's the same thing as, I don't know, when someone makes a capo with a built-in tambourine. You know, it's just like unnecessary. No one needed that. We were fine with normal guitar necks, you know.
I want to see a capo with a built-in tambourine.
I'm actually going to make a note of that, because I might be onto that. A couple of people have said Music Man, hands down for originality in new guitar models. I certainly think Music Man for the St. Vincent, like, what a fantastic and really important guitar to be a sort of really mainstream, woman's signature model. And I think that's a fantastic move for guitar signature models in what must be a sort of 99% male dominated signature model market. So, you know, I think they did great with that. And Music Man actually on a whole, because unlike every other company, unlike when Fender do a signature model Tele, which is essentially a Tele in a different color, maybe with a slightly different pickup, which you could make yourself anyway if you just retrofitted the parts, Music Man actually designed all those guitars from the ground up. And I think that's fantastic. Everything from the Mariposa, which is obviously the greatest guitar of all time in history, you know, right back to the, you know, to the Albert Lee and the Luke. Every single time they make a new guitar, it's a completely new thing. And even when we were there, Mark, when we were at the Music Man factory, and they were explaining that John Petrucci wanted his new, I forget the name of his weird new one.
What's Majesty.
Majesty. Oh, that was going to let listeners do that. But the Majesty was the only neck through model that they'd ever designed. And so they had to make new apparatus in their warehouse just to be able to make that, because that was something he wanted. And the fact that they would do that, the fact that when he asked for neck through, they just went, yeah, okay, I guess we could, you know, get some new machines in to do that. I thought that was wicked. They seem to really care about what their artists want.
I think Music Man is a really good shout, because again, think where they were in 2010 before they kind of went heavily down the kind of new signature route. And, you know, think about all the guitars we've talked about. We talked about St. Vincent. We talked about the Valentine. We're now talking about the Mariposa. Actually, it kind of seems like that could be the winner. And I guess it depends on like what the question is. You know, is it who did the biggest turnaround from where they were before before the decade, and, you know, how did they get there? Where are they now, kind of thing? But, you know, is that the question, or is it who's just put out the best stuff?
Ooh, yeah, I mean, that's the point. If you think about 10 years ago when we were both at GACMARK, the Music Man contribution was that weird Big Al, the bass version of the Albert Lee that we had, it, you know, hanging up in the bass department, which I think stuck around for the best part of sort of 10 years because no one wanted it. But they've come on absolutely leaps and bounds. Solar is another brand that have been suggested. I'll talk about the Solar. Yeah, okay. Solar is another brand that have been suggested. I think they're great. They're really important. It's really cool that it's kind of a sort of a YouTuber celebrity kind of guitar brand that has come into its own. Although, you know, those instruments were sort of available as Washburns before. I think they're definitely cool, and they're definitely wicked, super versatile, very modern guitars that are kind of affordable. I don't know if they've sort of set the world alight for me especially. I think they're really good. They're just missing that sort of, you know, that zing for me.
Now, one brand that we haven't talked about at all is Gibson, and obviously that will be incredibly controversial. But then think back to 2012, you know, think about a 2012 Les Paul, absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it was really only kind of 2014, 2014, 2015, where I think, you know, they, to be honest, those guitars are not really my flavor. But, you know, I think of like 2010, 2011, 2012, fantastic. 2013 as well, Jay's just contributed to the chat. All really, really good guitars.
Yeah, 2013 was cracking. 2014, I thought, was really good. The only problem with the 2014 models was that was 120 years of Gibson. And so you couldn't buy a Gibson that didn't have a weird little scroll banner on the 12th fret yeah. that said 120 years, and it just didn't look very nice. So
yeah, that's not really for me. Those guitars are still great. They're, to be honest, they're, I think, pretty much they're like the same quality as the 2013s, but they've got that inlay, and it's not really my taste.
I think Jeff's kind of right when Jeff says that they're more known for controversy than guitars at the moment. I mean, even, you know, I think the 2015 Gibsons will go down in history, the year that Gibson wouldn't let people tune manually. When you look back on that, you think about what they did for that year. That is,
yes, they're not my favorite guitars, but, you know, also they're not the worst guitars. We've talked about this so many times. They're not the worst guitars that Gibson have ever made. You know, you look back at some of the 70s stuff, and it's pretty bad. But yeah, I mean, I think they're in with a shout just for those first few decades. While we're chatting about this, by the way, if you want to come on the show and talk about your shout, or you want to talk about anything we've already talked about, just let me know in the chat.
Yeah, and Biddy Physics actually said earlier that he had a question. Apologies okay. if other people have also said that. I missed
Joe,
that
you, you talk about a brand. And let me see if I can set Beardy Physics live.
Talk about a brand. Another brand that I think is worthwhile. I don't know if... See, there are so many brands that have made fantastic contributions, but if we have to talk about the ones that are just going to be sort of complete overall, like, for example, Thorpe Effects. I thought when me and Matt had Adrian on for one of the Friday specials, talking about just how good... Thorpe Effects were from inception to product, and how consistent everything was, and kind of an effects manufacturer that bothered to go to the lengths of redesigning the chassis because he wanted to have that such a specific look. I think contribution to the boutique effects market, you would be hard pushed to find anything as good, as consistent, as well produced, as well marketed. If I mean, I know that's something I keep saying, and that's not something that will be interesting to everyone, but kind of as a brand as a whole, I think Thorpe's done a fantastic job. Kind of for me, I still think if we're talking about the brand that wins the decade, it's gonna have to be a brand that's got a sort of finger in every pie. But
oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, they need to be across a few different products to be a kind of brand. Now, we're going to try and bring in our first ever live contributor to the show. I'm going to try and unmute. Hang on, let me how.
Come on, do this more professionally.
Oh, this worked like perfectly before. Now I'm struggling to make it work. Oh, that might be why. Let's try that. Beardy Physics, Hello. You should have a live mic. Hello, how are we doing?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. What was your question?
Just earlier on when we were talking about how Strymon had like a big effect on the kind of pricing of pedals, and how like sort of boutique world has kind of pushed in a lot more since people have started paying a lot more for pedals. Do you think that's kind of had an effect on like the bottom line for companies like Electro-Harmonix?
I mean, I don't know about you, Joe. I don't think it's bottom line. What I think it has done more is like, it's more like public perception, you know, the fact that Boss are able to put out, you know, very expensive kind of multi reverb and a multi delay and things like that with the 500 series. I don't think that would have been possible before things like Strymon. What do you think, Joe?
I don't know. Do you think it's caused a problem for brands like Electro-Harmonix, as in like, because that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm like, if Strymon are now saying, hey, here's this pedal and it's really good, it's the best one you can get, it's the best.
When you muted, you cut out for a second there.
Oh, did I? Am I here again?
You're here again?
Okay, yeah, sorry, I hadn't pressed anything or anything, but okay, so I was saying I kind of feel like it's a problem for Electro-Harmonix, because when Strymon come out with a delay and they say, well, this delay's, you know, the best you can get and it costs £400, when you then have Electro-Harmonix come out the week after and go, oh, here's a really cool delay, take the Canyon for example, and it's £80-90, it kind of makes it might not for everyone, but it makes me sort of brush over the Canyon, because I'm like, well, yeah, I do want a really good delay. And maybe now that the best ones are £400, maybe I want to look at something that's sort of £200.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it just it, you know, there's two markets, isn't there? There's the kind of over £300 or over, you know, £200-300 big delay pedal, and then that's not going to it's not going to eat into people buying, you know, Hall of Fames or whatever at £50.
Yeah, definitely. I guess kind of at that price point, it's not going to affect. But I mean as specifically as things like the Canyon, because if you take, because I keep forgetting about that pedal, but that pedal is probably maybe the best delay pedal that's come out in a couple of years. I can't think of anything that delay pedal does that anyone else does kind of better, at least in a sort of standard functional way. And then it has a load of weird stuff that it does on top of that, and I kind of think it's been missed a little bit because Strymon have moved the bar, and because there's so many more expensive pedals now that we focus on.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And I don't know how this kind of factors into the, you know, brand of the decade kind of thing. It's more a question about, you know, do the, you know, has it changed the price of things? But, you know, is it to say that Strymon is a complete game changer and has won the kind of brand of the decade?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Jake's right. Jake says there's always been, you know, there's always been things like the Canyons and he's not sure on whether five times the cost changes the perception. It feels like a different customer group.
Yeah, different market. Definitely. It goes back to that thing of maybe this is slightly past this decade, but before you could buy a DD3 or a DD6, and now it's kind of like, well, yeah, there's like so many options ranging from DD3 price right up to, you know, DD500 price, and I don't think that would have been possible without the Strymon stuff.
Yeah. What's that Japanese brand of pedals that's really awesome? The ones with tons and tons of controls. We have a chorus and a delay, Mark.
Empress pedals.
No. Tone.
Oh, Free the Tone. Yes.
Free the Tone. Thanks, Jay. Yeah, Free the Tone. Those pedals are great.
Yeah.
They're not like tons of money.
They are tons of money. They're crazy. They? Yeah. Free the Tone are very, very expensive.
Oh, I'm going to sell the two that we've got.
Yeah, well, maybe that's an idea, but maybe we should just keep hold of them. How about that?
Okay.
Has anyone else in the chat want to come on the line and ask a question? Thanks, Beardy Physics, for the question, by the way. Definitely some stuff to think about. Anyone else want to jump on? Fran E says, I vote JHS for brand of the decade. If you want to come on and explain that point, you're more than welcome. If anyone else wants to come in with a suggestion, let me know in the chat and I'll put you live on the line.
What about people like Balaguer for introducing ultimate customization at relatively affordable prices?
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's it's hard with a company like that to talk about, like, you know, how can it be a brand of the decade when really, you know, it's the customers that are deciding what products they put out by, you know, ordering custom stuff. So that's really difficult for a custom shop, I think, to be.
Maybe you're right. Maybe they're a bit off point. Blim has mentioned Chapman. Chapman are obviously kind of a new company for the last decade. I think that's right, isn't it? They didn't exist before 2010.
No, definitely, almost certainly not. So, yeah, I mean, again, you know, people pointing out that they've had a massive impact, and yeah, I do think that's right. And that kind of, crowdsourced design.
And Derek Rich has pointed out, the internet input designed guitars. That was a fantastic idea that they had.
The crowdsourced design, you know, is something that I'd not really heard of before. It seems like something that they almost pioneered. And yeah, I mean, what they've managed to do is, you know, create a real brand out of it.
I really still want that brand to make a guitar that I like. Like that's kind of what I want from Chapman. They're just that sort of blending of modern and traditional. Like slightly traditional modern guitars would never kind of be my bag. I think I want something that's either totally one way or the other. I want something to be like super modern and ergonomic and kind of breaking rules and redefining what the standard is, or I want something to be super retro and really cool and really like style over substance. The sort of middle ground that Chapman go for, I tend to find a bit a bit bland. Yeah, I mean, like Check Chap says, they need to do an offset and their shapes are a bit boring. Their shapes are just sort of standard. Their strats are challenges,
I guess, I don't agree, because, I mean, think how much we talked about, you know, the Rabir baritone being a fantastic guitar. And, you know, I mean, I would say things like the Ghost Fret have put a really decent twist on, you know, on the Explorer. It's something very, very different. But, it, you know, it's still a twist on an original shape. But, you know, I love the Chapman stuff, and we talked about it for Gear of the Year a few times. And, yeah, like I said, that Rabir Baron.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Baritone, I think, is a favorite.
That was a very good guitar. Yeah, it was a very good guitar. Still, if I was going to buy a baritone, I'd rather get Dan Electro. But, you know, yes, the Beer baritone was very, very cool. One thing that we didn't talk about when we were talking about PRS is, of course, the Silver Sky. And I don't know, is the Silver Sky the most famous signature model of the last decade? The most contentious alongside the St. Vincent, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, the reaction to it has been very, very split, I would say. No one doubts that it's a kind of bad, you know, a well-made
bad guitar.
Yeah. So it's an incredibly well-made guitar, but it's a case of like, do you want that? Do you want the Fender thing if you're a PRS player, and vice versa?
Exactly. Fran E said, you know, was the St. Vincent contentious? And I kind of touched upon this a little bit earlier in the podcast, but I think it was, because it was the first mainstream women's signature model guitar in when signature models tend to be sort of 99% male guitars. And I think it caused a bit of an upheaval from the, you know, the less understanding areas of guitar enthusiasts. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic guitar, and I own one because of that. And I think the Silver Sky is a rubbish guitar. But you know, but yeah, it was definitely, people either loved it or hated it, not necessarily because it was a women's signature model, but just because the shape was so different. And you know, the idea of three mini humbuckers, and it was definitely the weirdest, most different looking Music Man guitar that I think Music Man have ever put out.
Which is weird for me. What I find weird is that the Mariposa has had so much kind of so much love. You know, there hasn't been the same thing. And for me, that's a weirder body shape than the St. Vincent, I think.
I mean, the Mariposa, we kind of don't need to talk about it, because it's kind of like talking about the Mona Lisa in art. Like, it's, you know, it's just, it's obviously perfect. It obviously has no flaws, and it is kind of what everyone's been working towards, you know, since the first electric guitar was built. So, yeah, obviously Music Man are kind of flying high with that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be contentious for Gear of the Year, because I'm not a huge fan of the body shape, I have to admit. I do like it, but it's whether it be, for me, it's in terms of the design and the shape and stuff, for me, it's quite a way below a Valentine. I much prefer the look of a Valentine.
What about things like the Epiphone SLs, and also Gibson introducing an entire line of guitars for Amazon? Like, if you want to talk about people of like brands that have done something really substantial to sort of, you know, galvanize a decade, making a range of guitars only available on Amazon is pretty incredible. And then, of course, Epiphone releasing a guitar for how much were those SLs? Like £80, you know?
I think they were like £89, and they were
Good. They were definitely released at out at like sub $100, which is just, you know, absolutely incredibly affordable. And they were super cool. They were such great mod guitars. Like all this stuff that Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum did with his was so cool. Like there was nothing kind of like it. I mean, obviously it was just a Melody Maker shape, but it was super cool.
Yeah. So, if anyone else wants to call in, we will take questions about anything else as well. If you've got anything other than the topic we're kind of going on, because I realize we've gone all over the place. We talked about a bunch of stuff in this call. So if you want to, yeah, hop in with anything else, if you've got any questions, do let me know, and I'll set your mic live even. So JB, if you had to say one brand that you thought was absolutely killed it this decade, bear in mind all the things that we've just talked about, what would it be?
I mean, the problem is with this question is it's hard to not be obvious, because I'd love to talk about someone weird and niche who I'd love to talk about, like the Milkman, the Amp or something like that. But if we have to talk about a brand that's fired on all cylinders across the board, and someone whose contribution to kind of all of guitars, effects and amps has been great. I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be all of them, but someone who's changed stuff. And that obviously kind of leads me back to Fender, because they've done such a fantastic job of doing such a consistent rebrand. I think more people are playing Fenders now than have ever played Fenders. Certainly I see more of them on a stage now than ever before, and I think that's partially because Fender have managed to get on board and release the right guitars for whatever the genres are that are in vogue at any given time throughout the last 10 years. And they seem to be able to do that, certainly at the moment, from everything from getting on board with bands like Pigs, and Black Peaks and people like that on the sort of heavier end of music, and then also doing all their cool like surfy color, like pastel colored guitars that have been really popular on the indie scene and the massively rising grunge scene at the moment. So I think as a brand that have just been consistent across the board. But it's so obvious to say Fender. So I don't know. I think
just kind of swoop in there at the last minute with Gibson after giving it the big one. I think Czech Chap has kind of hit the nail on the head, really. He says, I think making it all products, it can only be Fender. Boss don't do guitars, PRS don't make effects, Gibson don't do amps. And I do think that's right. When you think what Fender have done in all those kind of product categories in the last decade, you know, they've completely reinvented the kind of mid-price guitars by, you know, changing them from the standards to the player series, which have been way better. And also, you know, think what they've been doing in the time that we've been doing the podcast with what they've been doing with Squire as well. And kind of, you know, if you include Squire in the Fender brand, then yeah, there's kind of, you know, they've done tons of stuff with Classic Vibe. And then amps, you know, the Blues Junior, that line's been reinvented. They've been doing a ton of stuff with the amps. And then obviously the whole new pedal line, which I think we had pretty low expectations for, to be honest. You know, think about the history of Fender pedals, or the recent history. And I don't know about you, Joe, but I think the new ones are kind of have blown all that away.
Okay, so here's the flip then. Fender have done all of that, but isn't that all just like, yes, the biggest company in musical instruments have continued to make some popular stuff. And was it really good that they started making good pedals, or was it just really rubbish that they took them this long to make good pedals? And then if you think about the fact that I guess Fender are kind of just doing what they should, nothing's a revolution. Everything's definitely really good and really on point. But then what's most important about this, you know, the brand of the decade, what will we remember from the last 10 years? I'm kind of thinking, I don't know. It's obviously completely down to everyone's own opinion. But for me, I'm like, what would be the things I would think of most? What would be the things I remember? Is it going to be an affordable Stratocaster in a nice sort of pastel color? Or is it going to be the fact that Line 6 brought multi-effect and amp modeling to the masses with several sizes of affordable, incredible multi-effects units in the Helix. But then on the same time, I'm like, then in that same decade, Boss made pedal board switches. It's kind of cool and accessible, and Boss changed how people's effects pedal boards look. They now everyone has a switcher with a big board. I appreciate some people don't have switches, but you know, most pro bands are running with switches now, and most of them are using ES8s. They've totally changed that market, and they've released the Katana, which is the most accessible, good sounding amplifier, which they just keep making better and better. I'm kind of like, I don't, even though that's not across the board, how much has the Katana and the ES8 given to the world of guitars? How much has the Helix, you know, given to the world of guitars in comparison to, you know, to Fender, you know, as Elias says, you know, just you know, doing what people want.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, what can it do for people who are like into guitar stuff? And obviously the Helix has been perfect for people who are really into guitar stuff. And, you know, Line 6 have really, they've made a product on, and you know, and all four of those Helix units, they all do something slightly different, I guess, at different price points. But really, they're still for people that are super into guitar stuff. You know, even the smallest one, the Stomp, it's still for people that like want quite an expensive amp modeler. Whereas Fender, you know, they've really made strides into, you know, different sets of people that like, you know, are maybe not guitarists already, and they've really, with their marketing and stuff, they've kind of reached out to, you know, whether it's younger players or whether it's women players, which I think not a lot of brands have done. And we talked about it in the past with, you know, remember when we had the big conversation about like the Ed Sheeran acoustic and the Taylor Swift acoustic. And for me, that's, as well as making great products, that is like a big thing. You know, it's like a big thing. How can we get new players playing stuff? Yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's Fender. I personally think it's Fender, but interesting to see if anyone wants to come on and
debate. Disagree, although we do have a question.
Okay.
Their Kiln has an argument for Boss's gear of the decade. So let's pop him in.
Oh yeah, okay, fine. Let me 1 second.
You can slowly and unprofessionally work out how to do that.
We'll get quicker with this. We'll get quicker, you know, as we do it.
Plant has pointed out that Marshall definitely lose, like what happened there. They should be amongst the big names. Yeah, I kind of feel like a few brands have done that in over the last few years, have maybe sat on their laurels a bit too much and not been innovative enough. Certainly Marshall make absolutely fantastic amplifiers and are so responsible for so much music that's come out in the past. They just seem to have failed to stay relevant, or failed to, you know, stay, I don't know, just being used by people. I think of the amount of festivals that the Orange Amps make sure that they sponsor, or that Boss make sure that they attend. And, you know, Music Man do the same. They, you know, sponsor loads of festivals. Marshall just seemed to be losing grip on this, what was a really captive audience. So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Let's take this question.
Yeah, Stair Kiln, if you want to unmute your mic from your end, you should be live. You've got an open mic, and you've disappeared from the server altogether. Okay, that's annoying. We're back. Okay, you should be unmuted now when you want to talk. You are not muted. Stair Kiln, you should be able to, when you've got your question, jump into the chat. Feel free to turn your mic on and ask your question. In the meantime, if anyone else has got a question, feel free to put it in the chat and we can queue you up. Joe, Stair Kiln, you're live. Go on. Hello.
Yeah, another argument for Boss. Think about a brand that has resurrected classic pedals that everyone wanted, that they discontinued years ago, brought them up to date, provided contemporary features and a higher level of quality. Call it Wazzercraft. And I don't think any other brand has done that. And it's a outstanding contribution, which other brands should be doing as well. Yes, sure, Fender are bringing back some of the classic instruments of the 60s, 70s, and 50s. But Wazzacraft, I think, is an outstanding piece of innovation at an affordable price.
I think that makes a pretty compelling argument, actually. I hadn't really thought about that before. But yeah, I mean, Joe, how'd you feel about that as a kind of argument for being brand of the decade? Bringing back pedals like the VB2 that we thought we'd never see again and were also mega expensive to get an original.
Yeah, I think that the Wazzacraft stuff has been super important for Boss, and it was one of those things. Boss never did a reissue, like they only look forward, and so the introduction of Wazzacraft was a fantastic way of capitalizing on all these pedals that were popular. Now, I mentioned it earlier, but again, the same rig rundown. I'm that two dimensional. The same rig rundown with one order it. He talks about his like CS2, his Boss CS2 compressor, and how he has to spend like $500 on one every time they break because they don't make one anymore. And you know, Boss really took hold of the sort of second hand market. What Boss pedals were super popular that were going for loads of money. They made them better, reintroduced them at decent prices. It was a fantastic idea, very innovative, and not something that anyone had done before. Yeah, they were really good.
So I think we should getting close. Unless anyone else has got any questions they want to come on, I think we're getting close to wrapping this up because really we've kind of brought it down to Fender Line 6 and Boss. GTM Jeff says, have we reached peak pedal yet? What do you feel about that, Joe? Have we reached peak pedal?
Effects pedals are definitely going through the same thing as kind of craft beers and beards. At the moment, like it's we're having there are lots of them.
Has anyone thought to open up a barber's called Craft Beards?
Well, that's an excellent. There's definitely one of those. There's definitely one of those. But yeah, I don't think we're at sort of peak pedal yet because I think we're at a place where everyone wants something different. Everyone wants something unique, which is kind of cool. I mean, I think that's great. I think you look back 10 years ago and everyone had a particular set of pedals on a pedal board. If you looked at a genre, certainly everyone would have a certain set of things. Everyone would use, a similar bunch. So it's really cool that now there's so many that everyone can have their own individual flavor. I think that's cool. I think they'll continue to get more ridiculous over the years to come.
Well, okay. With that, let's wrap this up. And what we'll do is next week, come prepared with questions and come prepared We've got one last minute question. Ed Bentley, hang on, Ed. Let me put you on the line again. This will get more pro when we are better at doing this.
Wait, Google shows no barbershops called Craft Beards. There is a slot in the market for that.
Indeed. Ed, you should be live.
I did have a beard once. I had a really big, long one. Do you remember when I had my big, long beard, Mark Packham?
Yeah, I mean, I hated you more than I hate you now.
Oh, yeah. I went through a stage of like dressing really metal, and I had a big, long sort of... I think I'd watched a lot of 300, and I'd sort of gone for that sort of... It was very shapely. It required a lot of wax.
Ed is live on the line and we can stop hearing about your beard. Ed, do fire away with your question. Ed, are you there? You can talk. You should be unmuted. We can't hear you. He is talking, but we can't hear him. Continue talking about your beard, Joe.
My beard was a fantastic thing.
There we go. He's on. He's on. We can hear him. Okay. Ed, do talk. There we go. Fire away.
So Jay Waugh had a question. So in the spirit of charity, we've established Fender Boss PRS Line 6 for the past decade. If you two had to predict the next decade,
had to predict the next decade, who would it be? Joe, what are you thinking?
Who's going to be, who is starting to be innovative now, who could really sort of take the reins? I mean, like
Soundbrenner.
Well, Sam Brenner is an excellent shout. Sam Brenner is a fantastic shout. They've obviously just introduced a new instrument. I think the next stage for Sam Brenner is to move on from wearable metronomes, is to build that metronome into a guitar so the whole thing can vibrate with you whilst you play. And you can stay in time via small vibrations over the entire instrument. That would be... Oh, Czech Chaps nailed it. Harmony guitars. Harmony guitars really could. They're back. They're American made. The shapes are cool. Retro guitars are super cool. Incredibly good colors. If you look at their website, it looks like they're starting an accessory range, which looks like it's going to be really cool, kind of old style straps. And there were like maintenance kits and things like that. If they just do this, if they options, a few more pickup options, a couple more guitar shapes, maybe introduce a bass. I really think that could be, they just seem so well marketed. Everything's so good. It's such a consistent, modern, cool, retro brand. Like, it's not like, you know, when Dan Electro try and do the same thing. Dan Electro are sort of like, oh, it's just... they've been trying to do this for so long, and the guitars are not amazingly built, and they sort of, they have a good old go at kind of putting some new stuff out, but really it's sort of, it's just rehashes of what they've done before. Not that they're fantastic guitars, but what I mean is Harmony have got this whole new vibe about them. They can not make any mistakes. They can start from scratch and just keep making cool, weird, offset funky guitars. We talk about how well Fender have done just by making all their guitars pastel colors because they realize that, you know, all the hipsters buy them. Harmony can do exactly the same thing and be even cooler because they're not super mainstream. I'm into it.
How do we feel about an Epiphone revival after the reports that they're going to completely revamp the brand and put some better headstocks on?
If they change the headstock, think about it. Think about how Squire have gone from being sort of like, you know, oh, it's a Squire sort of 20 years ago to everyone being like, oh, no, yeah, the Squires are actually really good. Classic vibe, vintage, modern. What is that range called? Is that right?
Vintage classic modern? Vibe and vintage
modified.
Yeah.
So you know, think about how Squire have gone from, you know, from being cheapy to being really cool, affordable, quirky, interesting guitars. Like, they're not just, you know, sort of really anemic maple black Telecasters that sound a bit rubbish. They've kind of become vintage lacquered butterscotch, but with a pine body, and maybe we'll shove a humbucker in this one. It's kind of Squire of a become cool and interesting and innovative, and kind of Fender use them to trial stuff, and then you'll maybe see some of those sort of pickup configurations or colors or stuff appear in higher range models. Epiphone could do the same thing with a slightly better headstock. Oh my god, if Epiphone did a slightly better headstock, there would be no reason not to spend £500 on an Epiphone Les Paul. Like, why wouldn't you? £500 is a reasonable sum of money to pay, but you're not going to do it on an Epiphone Les Paul because, goddammit, that headstock looks awful. I would rather, you know, save up for longer and buy a sort of naff Gibson at like £700, even though you know the guitar doesn't look as good as the Epiphone. But that headstock, I'm telling you, an Epiphone rebrand could see Epiphone dominating the entire market. I don't think there'll be a single person playing anything else.
100%. With that, we should wrap up this live episode. Thanks for everyone joining live. If you're listening to this on Friday, then when it goes out, this has been experimental, and we'll definitely get better as we do it.
You should definitely unmute everyone.
We're almost there. Yeah, people are saying unmute everyone to end the episode so everyone can say bye.
That's a great idea.
Unfortunately, I don't have the power to do that the way that we've set up the server.
Well, actually, yeah, please don't do that because I've got to go and edit this afterwards, and I get as many tracks through. I get as many tracks sent through to me as guests we have. So if we unmute all of you, it's going to be a massive file. So we're not going to unmute you.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. The Discord server, I think, is going to stay open. I can see people talking about, like, anyone playing Destiny 2 on PC. I think the Discord server will stay open. So if you want to chat in there as well as on the Facebook group, you can do that. If you want to join in, if you're on the Facebook group and you listen to the regular podcast, head over to Patreon. From the Patreon, sign up at the $1 tier or above. There's instructions of how to join in. And, we just want more voices on the podcast, and we'll keep doing this, and we'll get more practice
again. We'll come up with another one. I'm gonna probably sit in the chat for a little bit as well, because I'm gonna be staying up and editing this podcast. So
yeah, cool. All right, well, I'm gonna say bye, and have a Have a good rest of
Come up with a better sign up than that. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.